okay? Okay, hands up if you can hear me. All right, I'm seeing hands right to the back. That's great. So as Anna graciously introduced me, my name is Samantha, and I've been attending here for just over a year. And it is such a pleasure and an honor to be able to speak to you today. Here I want to acknowledge that we're on the unceded territory of the Coast Salish people. And I'm so grateful to have gotten to live and in this community around Victoria for about 10 years off and on. So the title that I chose for this talk is What's Right About Being Wrong? Who here has ever been in an argument? Okay, come on. Chapter, how should we speak to one another, talking about dialogue. So, have this really lovely poem that I want to read to you from a poet named Rosemary. She publishes her poetry online. And she really explores what it is when we approach another person or an object and already have a decision made about them. And very often this is what happens. We go to meet someone, not even necessarily when we're arguing with them, but even just to say good morning. And it's like we don't even see them. What we see is already whatever our thoughts a beautiful poem. You can access her poetry online. She's the Word Woman. And I love this reading that Pat shared with us today about cherishing your doubts. Because it really is that. When we have these convictions, and sometimes they're so subtle, and sometimes they're about other people, but sometimes they're about ourselves as well. We might have a conviction that says, you know, I'm not good at this. Or, you know, I'm always like that. Or I should be more good. Or more that. Does anyone have those kinds of beliefs about themselves? Yeah. And the doubt is such a gift. It's such a gift. Because there's so little we know about the world and ourselves. And Karen addresses that really beautifully in this book. She talks about science and the advances of science. And quote this physicist, Percy Bridgman. And she talks specifically about how the advances in science, how we keep discovering so many things, and it seems like we know a lot. And the more purest sciences like physics are really unveiling that kind of notion that we can just keep advancing the territory until we're going to figure out every detail of everything. I did a degree in biology, and I had some friends who said, oh, I can never do that. And it wasn't because they didn't think they were smarter or anything. They said, I wouldn't want to study biology because it would take all the mystery out of life for me. And my heart stopped when I heard that. I really don't think that those have to be that we can learn more about the world and at the same time retain the sense of awe. And the study of physics is really showing us that the more we know, the more we realize we don't know. And this quote from Percy Bridgman really illustrates that. She says, "The structure of nature may eventually be such that our processes of thought do not correspond to it sufficiently to permit us to think about it at all. The world fades out and eludes us, and we are confronted with something truly ineffable." She says, "We have reached the limit of the great pioneers of science. The vision, namely, that we live in a sympathetic world, and that in that it is comprehensible to our minds." It's an interesting notion, you know, that there's a limit to this knowing. There's a limit to what those shared kind of clunky thought object conventions we can have about the world and each other. And I think that's wanted to bring up about when we engage with people in a more conversational way, when we are having an argument. One of the books that I really love to study is called A Course in Miracles. And it is really informative for some of the underlying psychology that happens when we get into conversations with people, and specifically when we want to make somebody else wrong in the discussion. So going back to when we entered here, how much we don't want to be the ones who are wrong. We want to be right. We want the other person to be wrong. And it's almost like a game of hot potato when you're debating with someone. No, you're wrong. Oh, you're wrong. It's your fault. And in A Course in Miracles, they call this a strange barter room in which guilt is traded back and forth. And the grievances are increased with each exchange. So it's really a lose-lose situation when you get into that. And the beginning of that quote, and I'll leave it all again, is that your will is lost to you in this strange barbary in which guilt is traded back and forth. And in this book, your will is the will for peace. And it is the will to feel that connection, that interdependence, that sense of awe for another person when we throw out little ideas and enter into a space where we experience, allow that person to speak to us with their being. In our congregation vision, which is just on the front of your order of service, we talk about our goal to gather and explore sacred mysteries, to sing our longings and our blessings, and to be still and listen. And this doesn't mean necessarily that you have to literally sit on a chair and not move. There is a way to be still inside when we approach another person. And all we're doing is we're quieting a little voice from the past that overlay our experience at that moment. And we're saying, you know, little voices, you're really helpful. You help us buy our groceries. You're really helpful. But you have limits. And I acknowledge those, and I want to just brush you aside so that I can experience being with this other person. And also in our vision, the point before that, we say we encourage our children's curiosity and nurture their openness about their nature, which is totally lovely. But I'd like to point out that all of us are like children in this way. We all have an open and loving nature. And sometimes our knowledge and what we think we know about things gets in the way.
I have one more piece that I want to read from Karen Armstrong's book, and then one more little poem that I want to share with you.